Hey, got the morning show with Aaron. That was Confidence Man with Holiday. And in the studio, I've got our counsellor, Lisa Thompson. Morning, Lisa.
Kia ora. Good morning, Aaron. Kia ora, everyone.
So, did you get wet on the way here?
It's... No, because I got a ride in with my daughter in her car.
I didn't expect you to walk.
No, it wasn't. It was just raining a little bit, and then Charlie dropped me off out the front here, so that was good.
We had a lot of car juggling in our house this morning. So, at the council, you just mentioned to me that the annual plan has been...
Approved. Approved. That was at our council meeting on Wednesday.
Can we say what the annual plan means for
people? The annual plan... what we have is we have our long-term plan, which is a forecast really for 10 years. And in that we break it down to three-year chunks where we review it, which we will be doing next year, 2024.
So this is a spending forecast.
This is a spending forecast and looking at what projects for communities, all of that. And then our annual plan is our yearly plan, which we do. We don't have to do it every year, but this one is that we adopted on Wednesday, and I've spoken about it before, is for 2023-24, which starts on the 1st of July and goes to the end of June 2024. So that will be available early next week. In fact, it'll probably be out today, to be honest, because we adopted it on Wednesday. So I didn't actually stay for the whole entire hui because I had Board of Trustees commitments at school.
Okay. So that was part of that rates increase that was discussed.
That's right. It goes into 7%, that. Yep.
So while we're paying more money, where's the good people always complain about paying more money, but I want to make the connection between that and spending more money. So have you got – what's some highlights of the spending, shall we call it that?
The highlights of the spending really are making up for the deficit, you know, with our emergency management, with the weather forecasting.
Right.
And we've put on, you know, our district plan review as well, which, you know, comes at a cost as well. So we could have deferred those costs. So we were at a deficit of $2.8 million. When we looked at our forecasting. And, of course, we've got the inflationary increases as well. So,
didn't feel the need to sell off shares in an airport like Auckland Council?
No, although we do have shares in the Hamilton airport.
Oh, really?
No. Okay. Yeah, there is council because Waipa, Hamilton and Waikato District Council have shares as territorial authorities and that. But, no, we haven't considered that as part of making money.
And in actual fact, Waikato District Council has been buying bits of land.
Bits of land. So, again, referring to our long-term plan, you know, we try and forecast growth in various communities, including Raglan. And there's, you know, money set aside for things like sports fields or what we call strategic property purchasing, I suppose, for want of a better term. So just recently we agreed to purchase land at Kōwhai in anticipation for growth there. Well, it's already growing actually, and the small sports field that they've got into Kōwhai, if you've seen that just by the little dairy, that's tiny and it's really well utilised by the communities. And so we've purchased land, I can't remember how the size of it, but it's just out on the outskirts of Te Kōwhai. So that's to provide for that growth with sports fields, but also it's quite a big chunk of land. There could be other development there for the community over time. We've also agreed with the purchase of where the old Waipa Hotel was in Ngārua Wahia that burnt
just
down.
Near the bridge, wasn't it?
Near the bridge. Old iconic two-story building that was the pub burnt down a number of years ago now, and so we made the decision to strategically purchase that. That's being demolished because we've got other council land, so I think that's a fantastic opportunity for the Ngārua Wahia community as a whole, you know, with the extension of maybe, you know, a community hub. Which they've already got one, but it's small, library, all of those sorts of facilities for future.
So they
planning.
Don't have a library in Arawaya?
No.
Wow, okay. that I imagined. I just would have assumed they did, but I guess
I'm going to double check.
They got that. Well, I mean, I don't know for sure. That's I say it's an assumption. The whole council building is there. It's got lots of books in it, I'm sure, but it's not really a library.
I'm just having a look.
So the purchase of fields for sports is interesting because the council staff have talked about doing that. And
they do have a library in Ngārua Wai.
They do. Okay, that's. I'm pleased actually, because that would be a little bit harsh not having one. The council staff have talked in the past about potentially purchasing land somewhere around Raglan for future sports fields. I guess we don't know where much flat land is.
No, and that's Rebecca Law, who's one of our planning staff, who is working in our parks and reserves. She's been on maternity leave. She still is, but she's come back to do some work at council briefly. She did say, if anyone, you know, if we could find some flat land for sports fields, you know, that would be great. So then we can do some forward planning to look at purchasing land strategically for that, because we know that at Papahua, you know, that's almost the soccer.
It's at saturation point in both definitions,
which is great.
Of the word.
Isn't it fantastic that, you know, we have such enthusiastic community around sports that we have to look at what those options are. So we really need to think about that future planning with the growth in our community for sports fields. So, like you said, where is the flat land?
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I know that Wainui Reserve is considered, but some are concerned that
it's too far out for, you know.
It is a far out. Also, that the ground falls away on both sides. You'd have to put some big fences. But on the other hand, where else is there flat land?
I know.
I don't want to mention the airfield because the status of that land is in one of flux at the moment.
That's so exactly right.
Yeah, and the with the land going back to the original owners, they probably need to figure out actually what their priorities are.
That will be their decision on, you know, once that's returned on what they would want to do with that pocket
of land. So long as it's still there with the erosion going on at the moment.
Yes, well, you know, we had our sustainability and wellbeing committee meeting on Wednesday, and we considered Port Waikato and the adaptive management planning for that moving forward, because they've really at Sunset Beach have been at the forefront of quite significant coastal erosion.
Well, we're worried here, but up there they're losing houses, aren't they?
Already one house has been removed because of the erosion, and in the last year they've actually seen 8 metres of dune erosion. And we had reports done in 2014 looking at the erosion at Sunset Beach and Port Waikato, which had predicted in there, you know, yearly erosion of between 2 and 5 metres. But obviously, fast forward to today, 8 metres is really significant. And, you know, it isn't helped by the weather events that we've had, Cyclone Gabriel, which actually the access onto Sunset Beach was really significantly impacted. So, you know, in council on Wednesday, there were 8 recommendations about the future planning for Port Waikato and what that would look like in terms of council's responsibility. And we had some community members from Port Waikato. We had a workshop last week on that area. So we had 2 very impassioned community members speaking to the need to put up maybe a hard surfaces like a large rock wall along the front, but the reports that we've had done and the peer reviews of that you know, those types, including regional council, that those types of mitigation just are not suitable for that environment.
And
over the last 3 years, I think it is, that they've said that the migration of sand from the south hasn't particularly happened to bring sand up to that part of coast, which I believe is cyclic, but it hasn't. The fact that that hasn't really happened over the last 2 to 3 years has exacerbated the situation with the weather events. So,
I've had several conversations with people from on the air from Regional Council and with Angeline Greensill as well here and Coast Care. And yeah, it's you create walls. It seems like a good solution, but walls create their own problems.
That's exactly right.
And you might get, they might in the end, if there's so much sand not being replenished, but it's leaving, you end up, they end up being undermined.
And the refraction, I believe, you know, because and the scouring out of underneath,
yeah,
and
particularly at the ends of the walls is problematic. So yeah, and if they do work, you'll just end up with a dirty great seawall and no beach as well, which is another thing.
Yeah.
So it is.
And Port Waikato at Sunset Beach, that's at, you know, that is a really dynamic environment at the face of, you know, the open
water
and the river. So, you know, if you do one thing, there's a cause and effect for every action you undertake.
The more I learned about it, the more I realised that it was.
Yeah.
It seems like a good idea on the face of it, but it just gets more and more complicated.
So we made a number of recommendations which were passed at our Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee meeting, and it's the adaptive management planning for not only Port Waikato but also coastal communities like ours, so which include, you know, looking at plantings that are appropriate to an area, you know, building or not building, depending on where that area is. If we're going to be building, would they be built at height? And then, of course, as the last resort, that retreat planning. So it's a whole suite of options for communities, and we've got an adaptive management plan that we agreed to in council at the beginning of June, which is a whole plan for adaptive management for our communities across our district, which would include, you know, because we've got river communities as well that are impacted by flooding, and that's different from, you know, the dynamic aspects of coastal communities like Raglan and Port Waikato. But, you know, I'm pretty sure everyone, you know, with the rain and the wind that we've had over the last couple of days, and particularly overnight with that rain coming down, I always wake up thinking, oh, God, I hope everyone's okay.
Hope the front yard's still here when I can get out this morning.
Or no, you think about the flooding and the inundation into our pump stations, all of that sort of stuff, you know, and just think, because the ground is so sodded. And I was speaking to Eugene Patterson, who's one of my colleagues, who's a councillor for Ngārua Wāhia and Te Kōwhai, you know, and he said that his lawn is completely sodden and he's on a septic system, and he's had to turn off the alarm on that because he said it's just so annoying because it just keeps on going off. But
Regional Council has said that because of all the rain we had at the start of the year, the ground is extra wet at the moment.
Well,
and much smaller amounts of rainfall will have a bigger impact, like they'll cause flooding when normally they wouldn't.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the stormwater liaison group minutes from last night's hui, which I wasn't aware of that was going on, and it was really interesting to see the graph on the water.
We're at the 95th percentile.
Yeah.
We're well above average.
Yeah, so I was really interested in that.
Time of year.
I'm going to read that once we're finished on air.
You mentioned like Port Waikato is the much more, that's the area that's really demanding attention at the moment. Does that those plans or preparations that you've put in place, do they apply to Papahua as well? And I ask that question because we've got the situation where since the walk bridge was removed, the old walk bridge, it's removed in effect of groin. And it was interesting to see that the designer of that bridge said there wouldn't be any physical changes to the environment, but Shaw Mead, who lives here from Ecoast, was worried there would be, and there has been, and it makes sense if you remove a groin. Do we just let it erode back to its natural point, or do we and then threaten, like it'll threaten Marine Parade a little bit, potentially, or does the council have an opinion about whether we should be putting some kind of low-lying groin back under the bridge?
I think I mentioned this last time, is that at the holiday park in our governance board meeting, we urged Megan May to, she's our executive manager that sits on the governance board at Papahua, but also she's part of the executive team that has oversight onto all of our facilities, our parks and reserves, and and you know, areas like Papahua that we really need to do some serious thinking about Papahua. And that area, whether, you know, the planting is adequate enough that we have scheduled for the right time of year, because you can't plant in the, you know, in the middle of winter. So, you know, our staff have a planting plan. And, you know, in the great work that Coast Care under Stacey have been doing around the northern side of Papahua at Rokekori at the sandspit there. But we really need to act with urgency to get some work done on options, you know, for mitigating those impacts. So, yeah, so that's a work in progress, and I haven't spoken to Megan since our last month's meeting.
I think a few weeks ago I felt like Papahua was under attack from both sides.
Oh,
but having the interview I had with Stacey from Coast Care and Angeline Greensill, and also the discussions with regional council experts, a lot of that is just
the cyclical,
normal cyclical sand patterns, except what's happening at Papahua, where the wharf bridge was changed.
Yeah, where the boat ramp is and where the urupā is. That, you know, just from my naked eye over the last 5 years, has had quite significant depletion of the sand there
and I think if I asked Sean Mead, he might. Oh, he was calling for some physical measurements to be taken, which wasn't done, but I think it might still be possible to see changes using Google Earth and things like that over the last 10 years.
Yeah, and it's always good because, you know, when you're looking at it from a perspective like mine, which is very uneducated, you might think, oh, it's really, really bad. But then if you look at getting data and those measurements, it might be, you know, that, as referenced by, you know, Stacey and others in that interview that you did recently, and with Angeline, the cyclic changes that happen as well, that ebb and flow of the changes, but it does look quite significant there.
Seen the shoreline from 1945, because there was a document on the regional council
website.
Yeah,
you shared
that
with me last time I was in.
Yeah, that was like, that does cut back in a long way, and it probably built up after they started building bridges there. It probably caused that sand to fill in behind the bridge, and we have what we have now.
And it's going back to what appears to be back in 1944.
Are we going to let it go back to there? Yeah, that's the question. And it's community kind of needs to decide.
But first we need some evidence base and some data with some options as well of what that could be, because we might say X, Y, and Z, but it has implications, as we said before.
Everything
if we
does,
do
doesn't
X,
it? That's what we're learning.
Y will happen, you know. Yeah. So,
Okay. Other issues. At the last community board meeting, regional council presented their thoughts on our internal bus trial in Raglan. They weren't very.
Well, it was data from 2020.
They weren't very positive about it, but you and community board members were going to meet with regional council.
That's right. That was on Tuesday. I didn't go. I actually had a meeting with our Raglan Naturally Wellbeing Community Connector. We were doing our MSD work. So I didn't go. So the best person to speak to will be Dennis.
Okay, so Dennis and Ross were the two, was it?
It was Dennis. It was open to the whole community board. Oh, okay. It's myself, Dennis and Ross, who are doing our community response plan for
civil
defence.
Yeah,
so we're meeting next week just to put the final touches on that. So I would, next time you interview Dennis, is to ask him what the outcomes of that were.
Because it did look like this regional council staff member, who was new, had very different ideas to what we had. But as you mentioned on the day, that the point of this is a trial, so we've got to
the trial, and to try it. I'd be really interested myself in how that went on Tuesday.
Yeah, and you were saying just now the civil defence planning is, you guys have made quite a lot of progress by the sounds of it.
Yep, Dennis has been leading that. He's actually done a lot of work on that. So, like I said, we're meeting next week, the three of us, myself, Dennis and Ross, to put the final touches on that. And then once we've done that, we'll share it again with Scott who is helping to coordinate those community response plans.
He's the council staff member.
A council staff member. Yeah. And we also have a short-term, for a year, a staff member now on board who is helping to support that, because we've actually got about 52 different communities wanting response plans done across the district, plus
52,
yeah, because we've got a whole variety of communities, you know, rural, urban, coastal, river communities, and that, so they are desiring their own community
it's
response plans.
That, like, you've got,
and then our Marais as well. So
right, so you've got community
there'll be
26 boards
of those.
Yeah, community boards,
community committees, but Marais, then Marais committees, residents and ratepayers
associations. Right, so everyone's saying, "Yep, we."
So it's getting that and identifying, because each committee is quite bespoke. Or each community desiring that is quite bespoke, because you can have a template, which is a great starting point, but their needs are quite different, and how they can respond is quite different.
Oh yeah, we know here we have our own unique challenges for every situation.
Yeah,
just in our own town.
Yeah,
so.
And some people and some communities are less likely to have access to immediate resources, where other communities are quite well prepared for events, whatever they might be.
Yeah.
So it's actually a huge body of work.
And it needs to be people on the ground, like it's three local people who live here who are sorting ours out, so that has to happen everywhere,
and then,
I guess.
Yeah, and then under that, then you've got other communities that are really quite self-sufficient, which is some of our rural communities, like at Rōpaki, or if you're looking at Waitatuna or Te Uku.
Yeah, I guess at Rūpaki you would know that you're going to have to look after yourself out there a little bit, or the community has to look after itself, because you're so far from everywhere else.
Yeah, and I think I've mentioned this before, even out at Phillips Road on the northern side of Aotea where I grew up, you know, it was some of the local workers. They had a slip on the road. It was some of the local workers that actually went out and cleared it with with the resources that they had. So there's quite a lot of independence in those communities as well, with access to equipment that can help clear roads quickly. You know, because we're limited. If we've got, as in council, if we've got things that are happening across the district, you know, have to prioritise where staff go out to.
Well, if there's 52 different areas, then I can easily see that.
Yeah.
You said before that before we went on the air, that you had a stormwater workshop at council.
Yeah, Stormwater 101.
Was that Stormwater 101?
It was Stormwater 101, which I found really fascinating, because, you know, I find it quite interesting, you know, around infrastructure, you know, whether it's our wastewater, where our pump stations are and things like that. In fact, on Monday we've got a tour to the northern part of the district to check out Te Kauwhata and other areas with their wastewater treatment facilities.
It's so different to ours.
Yeah, so we're doing they've got different challenges, so we're doing a tour up there. But yeah, we had our Stormwater 101 on Monday, which Mark Telfer, you know, who is actually on our stormwater that met yesterday evening, took us through just the 101 of the services that WaterCare provide in terms of our stormwater. You know, and I didn't realise how many outlets we've got across the district, or how many. I'm just finding.
You're trying to find that number again. You told me earlier when you came in, it was a large number.
Yeah, it was like, so we've got 56 kilometres of open drains, 154 kilometres of piping, 4,434 manholes, three pump stations, and those pump stations are like, there's one at Port Waikato, from, you know, where the water pools in a low-lying area, so it's put there to actually help alleviate the pressures on there. And we've got 759 discharge points out into the waterways, so across the district.
So the rivers and the ocean.
Yeah, so that's not insignificant. That's just a snapshot. So that was really interesting, because I think, you know, you find out that information over your time in council, but you don't necessarily keep it in your head.
Well,
so it's quite significant.
There's a reason council have a lot of staff, because there's a lot of things going on. But I see in that stormwater liaison group meeting that Watercare are doing a lot of
the stormwater outlet assessment management.
Yeah, checking on a lot of things.
Yeah.
And pointing out where there might be issues, which is actually reassuring to see that they're doing that. There was something in my mind that I was going to mention. This was just maybe coincidental. At the last community board meeting, residents of Stewart Street were concerned about the open drains there, and Watercare says that Stewart Street requires special attention to prevent erosion and undercutting risks. So if we get lots more deluges, that could be a problem, that street.
Yeah, so it's great that they're looking at that as well.
But that's that's an expenditure. It's always spending money, isn't it?
It is. And then, there's a lot of challenges. I think we just don't realise how much infrastructure there is in our communities in terms of that, you know, stormwater runoff, our wastewater discharge, all of those sorts of things. And it's, across the district. And so in our role as councillors, when we do the annual plan or when we do our long-term plan considerations, how do we fund the work that we know that needs to be done across our district? It'll be really interesting, you know, the next steps of the water reforms, because we've got...
Do we know what they are at the moment?
Well, there's the Waters Entities Amendment Bill, which is giving feedback to central government on some of the aspects, particularly around what water entity, you know, for example, Waikato District Council is in that is closing. Is it on the 3rd or is it today that's closing? So we've, those considerations of what entity we wish to be in.
So councils, the individual councils are giving feedback to the government about that at the moment.
Yeah, about the Waters Entity Bill. So that's what's called the amendment to that bill. So that's massive. So as yet, those haven't been finalised. And
if there's a change of government, they might be refinalised anyway.
Yeah.
We don't know. It seems very possible, though.
Yeah, so that's, so those are the challenges. And then, you know, it's exacerbated, like I said before, with the weather, when we're looking at our three waters provisions. So
if the residents of Stewart Street get what they're asking for, which is a proper curb and channel instead of open drains and a footpath, and that would cost a fair amount of money, I would say, what are they competing with in the long-term plan, like other communities wanting similar things? Is that what they're competing with?
Yep. Other communities across the district have a desire, you know. It's with our roading networks, with our waste minimisation, parks and reserves, footpaths.
So who actually, all of those. Like, that's a lot of stuff to try and process. Is it the staff's job to try and prioritise those? Is that what they do?
And then they come to, yep, and it looks at who, so you have your schedule of work that is in place for the year, and that's your standard work. But then the long-term plan is looking at where the communities can actually filter in what they would like done, whether it's a footpath on Stewart Street. Because we can't just pull money out because someone's requested it through a service request to say we want 150 metres of footpath done here. That has to be allocated in our budgets.
Yeah.
So that's the opportunity for our community going into 2024. It'll come out for consultation, what our communities want. Then that will have to be distilled, then come to council for the deliberations and decisions.
Yeah. And one other thing that came up in the last community board meeting was about the walking bus. And
Sheila
Chalkman.
Yeah, I spoke
already,
to her.
Yeah, she's already been in for an interview. So she
which was great.
I read about that. And we put that out on Facebook. And one of the teachers at the school was immediately
Angela.
Like, how can I get in touch with this lady? So,
yeah, so that's awesome, because I said to Sheila when I spoke to her on the phone, is to, put the word out there, because we do need support. It needs to come from the community and the school community to support, options for alleviating the congestion at school, and we're looking at putting
You're speaking as a Board of Trustees person now.
Yeah. So we think I mentioned it before. We had a wee with the school, with the board. Myself and Stefan Frew are on the transport committee up at school. I think that's what it's called. Oh, road safety, sorry. And so we met with the police and staff to look at what we can do. So we are reinstating the care crossing, which is that crossing, that informal crossing on Norrie Ave. I mean, ultimately at the
which
end...
Which part of Norrie Ave?
You know, that just when you come up Whitley Street and you turn right onto Norrie Ave and there's that little crossing there.
Yes.
So that seems to be a bottleneck. So to do the official care crossing there where you put the arms down where you can actually stop the traffic and then let the children cross or let the buses go through.
Yep.
So and then putting out comms regularly around walking, all of those sorts of things. So, you know, we tried to do that about 3 or 4 years ago, but we actually need our community and the parent community on board to find solutions. And I've said this before.
Yeah.
So the care crossing going in, the comms going out, and, you know, if there's an appetite to do the walking bus, that would be fantastic. And working with the police, you know, where could people drop off their kids and then their children walk from that point to school? Because we can't – I saw someone's comment, oh, the you know, something about the parking up at the school needs to be done. We can't create more parking.
We could take over the rugby field, but I don't think that's quite the the wrong priority.
Yeah, we can't create any more parking because we don't have the area to do that. So,
and you certainly don't have enough area to accommodate all the parking that would be required to accommodate all the cars that are trying to turn
and
up.
And it's only for like about 20 minutes in the 25 minutes of the morning, and the same with in the afternoon. It's the drop-off and pick-up times that are the problematic
The school space everywhere.
At school.
What I'd like to know is if really long-term thinking, if the ministry is in the process of looking to buy some land for a future high school in Raglan, if we're talking about population projections of 12,000 people by 2070 or something, you know, somewhere around that area, you're going to need another school.
Yeah, and that's a question to the ministry.
Yeah, and it's something that they haven't been good at since Roger Douglas arrived. They used to be really good at that. They used to buy farmland decades in advance. They used to have that kind of long-term thinking. We've talked about this before but the ministry does need to get on board with that. So have you got other things that you've been doing that you want to mention here?
Yep, I met with one of our previous students from Raglan Area School, Grace Mandoro.
Oh, yes, I saw her working. What's she working on at the moment?
I met with her because she wants to do a mental health gumboot day.
Right.
That was it. Which is in November. So I met with her to talk about her idea and how we can support her in making that happen, which I'm absolutely certain that we will. So it was great to catch up with Grace because I hadn't seen her because she's the same age as my daughter, Charlie, and they were ex-Raglan Area School students. So I'm looking forward to working with that, with Grace, to make that happen. Also, I mentioned before, I met up with Lara Sweetman, our Ministry of Social Development, Raglan Naturally Community Wellbeing Connector, and about her role and some of the work that she's been doing alongside Teresa Morgan from Raglan Medical, setting up a Rainbow Youth support group locally, looking at mental health, you know, and what that looks like in that role, and helping just to support her in that role. Also, I met up with Moko, who is one of the Hamilton City Council Māori councillors, and others, including Tilly Turner, who's our Māori ward councillor for this area, around encouraging people to participate, particularly Māori, in the upcoming general elections. So, and also met with Tauri Kura, Kirsty, and Kawena about hosting an event here in Raglan.
So they hosted sorry,
Meet the Candidates. Last year they hosted the Meet the Candidates event alongside Raglan Naturally last year before the local body elections in October, and I thought that went really well.
Yeah, they did a good job.
So they are planning on doing another sort of event, but this one would be more around hopefully engaging young people, rangatahi, in what does the elections mean for you, how to participate, and looking at some of the party policies, who is this policy, you know, having games and interactive opportunity for young people and the entire community sometime in September. So organising that, so that's something to watch.
Okay.
We haven't got a date for that. And also just a heads up that the Freedom Camping, which I know, you know, there was the pre-consultation out to the community, that will be coming out for the wider community for input and consultation from the 14th of July to the 13th of August for input. So keep an eye out for that. So I'll keep you posted on that, Aaron. And then that will, you know, come back to council in September, and that will be adopted hopefully in early October. So those are things to just look out for.
Yep.
And the community. So that's about it from me.
Okay. And what are you off to today? You've got things to do today?
Actually, I'm off to the iHub. I've got a volunteer.
Oh, that's right. Fridays.
Fridays. Not every Friday, but I've got that. So at 10 o'clock. So just perfect timing for me to wander down there. And it's not raining, so I shouldn't get wet.
And within 5 minutes, it could all change.
I know, exactly.
We'll check the rain radar. Well, look, Lisa, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Aaron. Thank you, everyone.